Mia, an aspiring actress, serves lattes to movie stars in between auditions. And Sebastian, a jazz musician, scrapes by playing cocktail party gigs in dingy bars. But as success mounts, they are faced with decisions that begin to fray the fragile fabric of their love affair. And the dreams they worked so hard to maintain in each other threaten to rip them apart. This is the storyline from La La Land, written by Irene for IMDb. Now, I don't know who Irene is or what IMDb stands for, but I needed someone to tell me about La La Land, because Margie and I haven't seen the movie and probably won't. Call us old-fashioned, but we are in the demographic that remembers classic musicals. Showboat, The Unsinkable Molly Brown, Hello Dolly, Easter Parade, White Christmas, Wizard of Oz, Sound of Music, South Pacific, The King and I, Oklahoma. Okay. Had to have fun with that one. In other words, we are too old to enjoy La La Land. Oh. In the words of one reviewer, once upon a time, there was the American musical, which could inspire the world by wielding great visuals, music, story, and characters. Today, we have the perfect lobotomy instrument called La La Land. Ouch! Yes, we are old-fashioned. And I was going to say like many of you, but at least like some of you, have good taste in musicals. Listen, I just write the stuff. But there's a whole world out there, as some of you have demonstrated, that loves La La Land. On Tuesday, La La Land joined Titanic and All About Eve with 14 Academy Award nominations. We'll have to see. But 14 nominations are pretty impressive. As in most ever, La La Land has the GOAT. Greatest of all time. Normally they say that about the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, but probably why you all didn't know what that meant. Gosh, is today really our annual meeting? All right. According to Anne Hornaday, film critic for the Washington Post, La La Land pulses and glows like a living thing in its own right, as if the MGM musicals of the Singin' in the Rain era had a love child with the more abstract confections of Jacques Demy. In doing so, the film created a new kind of knowing, self-aware genre that rewards the audience with all the indulgences they crave. Beautiful sets and costumes, fanciful staging and choreography, witty songs, escapist wish fulfillment, while commenting on them from the sidelines. Now, I'll leave it to you whether or not to see La La Land. But I offer it as an example, much like our recent election. of how diverse and opinionated we Americans can be. Not to mention, La La Land is a great word and makes a great title for a sermon. And you know, Michael Moore is kicking himself for not making his own La La Land film about America. La La Land, the place, not the movie, is where people out of touch with reality live. So having a little fun at Bible study on Wednesday, I asked, who does your pastor think is living in La La Land? Am I talking about President Trump's America with their alternative facts? Maybe. But remember, your pastor has been critical of the other America as well, suggesting progressives were living in an echo chamber long before they said so themselves. And don't even get me started about Madonna. Maybe I'm not talking about either of them, or maybe both. I said, you'll have to come Sunday to find out. Now, there's a teaser. The truth be told, I'm speaking about all of us. We may be the screaming squirrel. We may be the acorn. But we all find ourselves in La La Land at times. We have our agendas, perspectives, opinions. We spin the numbers. We make our cases. We see what we want to see. We create our own realities. Sometimes we get it right. Sometimes we're out in left field. This is especially true for Christians. Go home this morning and reread the Beatitudes. What American Christian truly believes them? If we do, why are they not clearly reflected in our lives or our nation, in our programs, policies, or life choices? The poor or the poor in spirit, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, are they truly blessed in America? No. And it's craziness to think they are. Paul knew it, a stumbling block to Jews, foolishness to Gentiles. Maybe it's Jesus. Maybe it's us. But somebody is living in La La Land. Friends, it's not Jesus. We're the ones living in La La Land. God has claimed our lives and called us to live accordingly. I will be your God if you will be my people. Pretty simple. God has given us direction in the Ten Commandments. God has given us an example in the life of Jesus Christ. God has given us a witness in each other. God works in our lives day in and day out to save us from ourselves. Yet we proceed to live as if there is no God. Or worse, as if we are God. This is why I chose to preach our reading from Micah this morning, proclaimed 700 years before Christ to a people living in La La Land. Micah's words are as timely as ever. Micah offers us a glimpse of a covenant lawsuit. God has made a covenant, a contract with God's people. I will be your God if you will be my people. The people have broken the contract and God is bringing charges against them. Micah summons all of creation, the mountains and the hills, the foundations of the earth, to hear God's complaint. God then recounts all God has done on behalf of God's people. God brought them out of slavery in Egypt. God provided leadership in the wilderness through Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. Through them, the covenant was established and maintained. God intervened when King Balak conspired with Balaam to curse Israel. God was there when Joshua crossed into the promised land from Shittim to Gilgal. God has done all God promised and more. The people cannot refute God's claim, so they turn to satire and sarcasm. Using their words, Micah calls into question the cultic practice of offering sacrifices. With what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings and calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams or 10,000s rivered of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Each petition becomes increasingly absurd. Yes, burnt offerings, even animal sacrifice, were common. One ram would have been a prime sacrifice. There are accounts as many as 12 were being sacrificed at one time. But thousands of rams? 10,000 rivers of oil? God never demanded sacrifices of that magnitude. Neither did God demand human sacrifice. In fact, God provided a ram when Abraham brought Isaac to the altar. Yes, the firstborn of any living species belongs to God. However, provisions for redemption are made, again, as the story of Abraham and Isaac suggests. By exaggerating their claims, God's people were trying to claim God demands too much. They would have the world believe it is God who broke the covenant. But their alternative reality is unconvincing. Without rendering a verdict, Micah calls God's people to return to the covenant, living life as God intends. God has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, and to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. All God requires, all God has ever required, the obedience of Adam and Eve, the hope of Abraham and Sarah, the law of Moses, the faithfulness of David, the cries of the prophets, all God requires is summarized in three words: justice, kindness, and humility. In those three words, personal piety gives way to covenant piety. Appeasing God gives way to serving God. And cultic sacrifices give way to life-giving mutual relationships with God and with God's other children. Whether we're the acorn or the squirrel, This is how we are to live in La La Land. Doing justice, loving kindness, and showing humility. Paul warns us, people, especially those feeding their appetites and egos, people who believe life's purpose is to be bigger, better, and more, will think we're foolish. Maybe we are. But Jesus is pretty clear. There is no obfuscating. The poor and the pure in heart, the meek and merciful, those who hunger and thirst and work for righteousness, the just, the kind, the humble, and perhaps especially those mocked and ridiculed and persecuted for living that way, are the people Jesus calls blessed. Our calling has always been to proclaim the gospel for our life together. So what does it mean to be the pastor, preacher, who has taken a vow to love everyone in the congregation in such a divisive time? This is the question asked by Craig Barnes, president of Princeton Theological Seminary, in his column, The Pastors I Worry About. Dr. Barnes isn't so concerned about pastors of politicized congregations, conservative or progressive. They know who their people are. But pastors such as Melissa, Jose, and me, serving diverse congregations such as ours, have an almost impossible task. How can we hold the center? How can we be both unifying and prophetic in such a divisive time? Dr. Barnes doesn't believe we can. Ours is a time when, like Luther, pastors must say, "Here I stand. I can do no other." While I feel the pressure, I don't agree. I believe the center will hold, and it's time to reclaim that high ground. As I said at the start, it's not just conservatives or progressives. We're all living in La La Land. We are all out of touch with reality. Some more than others. But none of us are immune. Strangely enough, this is good news. For the more chaotic things become, the more clearly we see God is God, and we are not. Our only hope, living here in La La Land, is to remember who we are and whose we are. Doing justice, loving kindness, and walking humbly with God. Because as foolish as it seems, that is what Jesus would have us do. Thanks be to God. Let us stand and affirm our faith together. Oops, no, my bad. Let us stand and sing the hymn, When a Poor One, and then affirm our faith.